Hey, soccer friends.
Ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes.
I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This is part two with Classic League. I'm not going to say too much because there's no point of saying anything. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
I look at it as a psychological game. To me, at the end of the day, that's sometimes what it is. And the one thing I will say about having the uniform soccer ball, every kid knows what type of ball you're going to be using. So at the end of the day, it makes a much cleaner play because every ball reacts the same then. A little tidbit of side information, being the nerd that I am, what to expect, how it inflates, and all that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the rules are very fascinating to me because at the end of the day, you have them there. A lot of times it's for safety, or if it is the law of the game, it's to let the game be managed. My favorite changes are like handball. As a parent, like I've talked to officials enough now, is handball. And I'll say handball on the sideline quietly, but I will not, like, it's so subjective because at the end of the day, it's how wide is their arm spanned or how low are their arms to the side of their body. And it can all change based from ref to ref. Yeah, it does.
Did the ball play the hand or did the hand play the ball?
Right.
I do
a lot of younger, yeah. I do a lot of it being relatively in the last referee of the last couple of years, doing a lot of the U11, U12, U10 games. And of course their hands seem to always be very, you know, in play. Do you want to stop the game? And Rob can talk about, of course, the importance of the flow in the match And so, yeah, it is a very much of an interpretation. And you go back to some of, I was just thinking as well, you go back to just some of our policies, if you will, the policies and procedures. Rob and I were out at Richland on Saturday. We want all the parents to be on the player side, right? Every now and then, more often than not, they're looking on a hot day, they're looking for shade. And so they might end up going finding a tree that happens to be on the player's bench side. We look very draconian when we go and move them to the other side of the field, because if they aren't causing any problem, they're wondering what's the problem. But it's those few incidents where maybe the parents then do get involved in the match and they're now on the player side, which creates a safety issue. And so we always have to make a judgment call on, you know, what's being, you know, reasonable human beings and allowing for the fact that maybe an elderly person wants to find a shady tree and what could potentially lead to a problem in the match. We're humans. We don't like to just go and be the get off my lawn people. And at the same time, we have rules and procedures in place for a reason.
Now, when you guys have major changes in your rules and policies, does it go through the board and get approved by everyone involved? Or is it like, or how do you guys, even when FIFA, however you pronounce it, the federation comes out comes out on the national level and say, here are the changes. How long do you all take to implement those changes? Because some of them are the handball change, like the hand from the foot to hand, it's not a handball, and things like that. It's like people don't understand that. And I think you could spend years. Like, I truly feel like I have spent 4 years trying to understand every law that's out there. I don't know how many times I've read through the laws, and every time I've read through it, there's a new question that pops up on the apps explaining something from a different angle. And it's, oh my goodness, like it just expounds upon itself. So how often do you make changes that are outside of that, or how long do you all take to get into place to inputting new laws or rules to aid protect players or to make the game better?
There are two groups of questions there.
Right.
Regarding the association and our laws and our rules and policies, those rules and policies can be implemented pretty much at any time by a vote of the board. And we try not to put rules and policies in place in mid-season. So any adjustment that we're going to make as an association would take effect for the spring playing season. Now, as Suma mentioned earlier on in the podcast, spring playing season for 15 through 18s is coming up very, very quickly, right? So any sort of changes in policy will affect that spring season only. As it comes to IFAB law changes, of course, they meet every year and they institute new clarifications or adjustments to the laws of the game that are affected globally. As an official, both Joe and I are, one, badged under USSF, two, governed under North Texas. So as members of the North Texas Committee of the USSF, a group of officials, once IFAB comes out with clarifications and or new laws to the game, USSF takes that into account and determines how they want that broken down amongst their member associations. North Texas Referee Committee takes that same group of information and then they pass it down to the 2,500 plus referees that are here in the North Texas area. And so we have online learning. North Texas puts together online sessions where they'll talk about the clarifications. Boys Classic League specifically has a referee meeting prior to the start of our year where the referees all come together and we talk about the rule changes. We talk about the law changes from IFAB, how North Texas interprets those and how they would like us to interpret those as well. And so that's really how that information comes down. Now, you mentioned the handling laws, right? So about 3 years ago, those changed. It went from roughly 3.5 pages in the laws of the game down to, I think it's now 4 sentences and a giant picture. So it's much clearer from a wording perspective and yet more ambiguous because they leave it up to the official. But I think if I remember right, in the laws of the game, the first sentence of the law for handling states that not every touch of the ball in the hand is a foul. So from there, there's a lot of things that as an official, you have to take into play. Was the hand in an unnatural position? Did it lead to a goal scoring opportunity? Did the player have the opportunity to put his hand and his body in a different position to receive the ball? Did they have time to think about that? There's lots of little things. Was it a deflection off the own player's body to his hand? Was it a kick from the opposing player to the hand? So those are all things that we have to make in a split second decision on the field. And so I think the laws of the game became clearer, which allows the official to make more of an interpretation, but it makes it a little bit muddier from the touchline perspective as to what was a handling offense and what was not. And I think you could have a whole podcast just in itself of the laws of the game and the interpretation either here in North Texas from a competitive rec perspective or across the U.S. and across the world, because it happens every day. We have more armchair FIFA officials on the touchline than I think anywhere else in the world here in North Texas. It's amazing.
I can't say anything. I won't vouch here for that one. I've gotten better. I've gone 5 games this season without saying a single word other than to my wife.
I didn't hear you on Monday night.
I didn't say anything Monday night. I did put my arm up once. That's about it.
I think it's also important to note, too, that the laws change every year.
Yeah.
They might change just a little bit here and there, or IFAB comes out with clarifications as to what they really meant. They get together, they write it up, and then it gets implemented in real life, and they're like, that's not exactly how we wanted that to go. So we'll issue a clarification, and we'll make changes to the wording. And then that gets translated into other languages across the world. But I think it's important to remember that a lot of the parents, their frustration comes from they remember the days they used to play, or they remember the way it was when they watched their favorite players play, like what the game was then. And I think years ago, there was a level of play that is maybe a little bit more physical. I think the threshold for trifling or careless or reckless fouls may have been a titch higher than it is today. And so I think they're remembering those days and they're trying to bring those experiences into today's play, and it doesn't work. And that's where we get a lot of conflicts between officiating crews and parents and team members and things like that.
I think my day job, I work for an airline, and we talk about when we have charter flights, and we charter sports teams, and only certain people can fly those planes because it is $1 billion of salary flying from that plane from one location to the next, and you want to make sure you have the best qualified people. With that being said, how do you find your officials, and where do they come from? And you talked about you have a yearly you have your meetings for everything every morning and then preseason. But where do they come from? Because at the end of the day, like a parent like me, could they go take their certification, go get qualified from Plano Rec Association, and then come knock on your door?
Yeah, so absolutely. You can absolutely do that. And we would welcome you with open arms. We're short 2,500 to 3,000 officials here in North Texas. And it just keeps the officials that we have keep aging every year, and we're not bringing in as many new, younger officials to take their place. But the referees that Classic League has, I can almost guarantee you won't find the level of officials that we have anywhere else. So for example, we have currently out at our fields, we have in our pool of officials that we can pull from every single match. We have FIFA badges. We have FIFA assistant referee badges. We have pro referees, MLS pro referees. We have national badges. We have national assistant referee badges. We have national emeritus badges. We have regional referees, regional emeritus badges. Since U.S. Soccer changed their structure a little bit and they've made all of the lower level officials what they call grassroots officials, we have grassroots officials, which is any new official that comes in, plus officials who have chosen for one reason or another not to climb the referee ladder. But because we have so many here in North Texas, North Texas has what we call a grade 7 plus, which is that official who's in the grassroots pool per USSF, who wants to move up through the ladder. And so they get a little bit more recognition. They get a little bit more coaching. They get a little bit more of the more competitive matches. So within all of that, we have FIFA badges out on those fields, and we have grassroots officials out on those fields. And we assigner is a USSF national assigner. So she works with U.S. soccer to assign officials in this area. She knows exactly what she does. She works for MLS Next. She works for us. She works for a few other things. And so she has a pool of fantastic officials. And I can honestly tell you, again, my son plays USYS. My son also plays U.S. Club. The pool of officials that the Classic League has is by far leaps and bounds beyond anybody else. There are a lot of other good assigners within the North Texas area, and they have a lot of officials within their group, but they don't have the depth and the knowledge of officials that Classic League is fortunate to have. Things that go on beyond just the assigner and the officials, we have former regional instructors, we have former national instructors, we have former pro players who come out and are in our mentor program, are in our assessment program. All of our officials have access to mentors and assessors, which I can't think of another league in North Texas that has that. I think actually McKinney Soccer Association is probably the only one who's working to implement that right now. But we have, in any weekend, we'll have referee coaches out watching individual matches and critiquing officials and how they work, whether it's the center referee or the AR, and to provide them feedback on how to get better, what they did really well, what they're good at on the field already, and what they can improve on. In the Classic League, we also have a mentor program where we take 12 of our younger officials who want to climb the referee ladder and to advance and to get better. And we put them in a mentor program. We pair them up with a former official, somebody who's licensed to be a referee coach, and to provide them instruction on every match that they work, whether they're in the middle or on the touchline. And so it's a one-year in-depth crash course to become a better official. And it's phenomenal. The level of information that you can get out of that is great. They provide, they provide instant feedback at halftime on foul recognition, on movement, on play, on being able to tactically read play and what the teams were doing, and to technically, per the laws of the game, apply those laws, what were good no calls, what were good calls, what were key match incidents that you got right or that you got wrong. And I can't think of anybody else in North Texas that does that.
There's not many leagues nationwide that has that. No. Talking to families all over the country, and it's the one thing I love about this game. Suma touched on it earlier. It's a game that brings everyone together, and you don't have to speak the same language. I've heard stories so many times how this game brings communities together just because it's soccer, and no one has to speak the same language, but all the rules are the same no matter where you go.
So one of the things I've learned and that I've enjoyed so much is I might go out there on a Saturday or a Sunday and work with a young student who's maybe a player at Richland who referees for us on the weekend, who's from Spain or from another country. They may be a more experienced referee than I, but they might be 20 years old. I could be 30 plus years older than them, and they're more experienced, and we're learning from each other. That's one of the great things about this, the game of soccer, brings people together. And then certainly that happens as a microcosm in the referee pool. One of the things I was going to add, while Rob was talking, is that Classic League provides college scholarships. And one of the recipients of a college scholarship this past year was not a player, but as a referee. It's a young man who made his choice that he really wanted to focus on becoming a great referee, and he was able to earn a scholarship to college. He's going to North Texas, so he continues to work with us throughout the week and on the weekends, and we provide that opportunity. I don't know if that happens out there elsewhere, but I think that's noteworthy.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think it's important to note that as referees, we all have a love for the game. We may have a different background or how we got to it, but I think we all have that same love for the game. We don't want to be – try to figure out how to say this right, but we don't want to be the center of attention. That's definitely – that's not what we want. But I think what you find, especially in lower level matches or in lower level leagues within the US, you get that feeling that it was all about the referee, or the referee only made foul calls against my team and he wouldn't call anything else for the other team. But I think it comes from a lack of really understanding how the laws are implemented. Soccer is a game of angles and positioning. And from a parent on the touchline, you've got the widest angle of anybody on the field, right? You can literally see from one goalpost to the other goalpost, and you have the widest angle. As an official on the field, your angles become very much narrow. You're focused on where the ball is going to go, where play is going to go, the immediate actions that happen directly after the ball is kicked someplace else. You're not watching the flight when it takes off. You're watching what the players do afterwards and then having to catch up with that play. So your focus is very minimal. And every referee is going to be different. Joe and I have different levels of what we would consider a careless foul. And each match is going to change those levels of what's a careless or a reckless match. Teams that have lots of flow to them, they like to move the ball very quickly, right? And those little touches or those little brushes off the ball, where you might call those in a lower division or a lower age match, you're definitely not going to call in a D1 match or an MLS Next match. That's just not going to happen. So referees like flow. We don't want to be on our whistle all the time. We don't want to be in our pocket all the time. But I think match incidents call for that. And so I think that's where parents, spectators, and even some players just don't understand the level of the referee and what his position is in the match for that day. And I think that just comes from more education. That comes from, it'd be great. Parents, you don't have to be a referee, but take the course just to kind of understand what U.S. soccer is asking of officials today.
The course is free to take until you have to pay for your certification. So
absolutely,
that was the first thing I did. I'll be honest, like my son, when he started to play soccer, I was co-coaching the team. And so I went and got my grassroots done. And when we had a hiccup on the team and we parted our ways from the team, I was getting ready to go do my D license, and I had to have a team, and I no longer had a team. So what did I do? We went that spring season. We had a game where a field next to us got canceled because they did not have a ref. And I'm like, I don't ever want that to happen to my kids. Yeah. So I went out and got my certification done.
Fantastic.
Just for that reason, because I never wanted a game to be canceled because a ref doesn't show up. I have helped on the sidelines. I think a great way to teach parents the laws of the game and to shut up about offside is by making them go be an AR. And yeah. It teaches them very quickly on, you get so focused on the play or the ball or what's going on, you lose focus on the job that you're doing and or your role on the field. And that leads me into my next question. So with your officials, are your ARs truly ARs, or are they more linesmen, or do you treat them based on the knowledge they have? Because the center ref they could wave their flag up and the center ref can say, that's not a foul in my book, we're moving on. Or right. When the play goes dead, they'll go over and talk to the AR and say, what did you see, if it happened really quickly afterwards?
So it all, the answer to that question is it 100% depends. It depends on the referee and it depends on the referee crew. Yes, they're a part of the referee crew. So they have the ability to flag the center referee's attention for any sort of infraction that takes place during the course of the match. From the minute they step onto the field till the match is over, the referee and the referee crew has the ability to enforce the rules and the laws of the game. Now, you get more experienced referees in the middle and less experienced referees on the touchline. There may be a little bit of the center referee maybe waving the AR down. That's not how I saw it. Thank you for popping the flag. I acknowledge that you did that, but we're going to play on advantage. Maybe there was something that the referee saw. That definitely happens. I will tell you that this is no secret, but referees as a crew, we have a pre-match game plan. We confirm with each other what we want to have happen and what we want to see. So as the center referee, I'll tell Joe, this is really what I want you to focus on. I know this team runs a high offside trap, so your primary focus for the next 90 minutes is 100% offside. And anything that may occur as a foul in close to the corner flag, because I'm going to stay back a little bit in case that there's a fast break or something along those lines. I may not work as deep. I'll give Joe that information. Joe, I also want to make sure that we never take our eyes off the field. So we'll practice TLC, trail lead center, when it comes to recording information and things along those lines. And then on throw-ins, you take care of the thrower. I'm going to manage the landing zone. So I'm not going to look for whether his hands were behind his head or his feet were touching the ground. Those are all things that we're going to give in a pre-match. Penalty, outside. There's all sorts of visual cues.
Joe? Oh, I was going to say the other night, I was working with a referee, and his instruction was, you watch the feet, I watch the hands, right? So it can vary by referee, but that's typically discussed.
Yeah, and I worked a Dallas Cup match, not this last year, but the year before. I had a FIFA badge in the middle, myself. The fourth official was a CONCACAF official, and the official on the other side was another USSF official. And the pre-match game plan went just like this. I don't ever want to see your flag come up unless the ball's out of play or the player was offside. Other than that, I've got the match. Okay, so we know as a referee crew, he's going to make all of those calls. And we're not interacting with him the way we would with other officials. And so that's how that match went. That's how that game went. And so what, right or wrong, indifferent, that's what happens. And I think it can be frustrating from a parent's perspective as, hey, AR, why didn't you help call that foul? Well, okay, quite honestly, I was instructed at the beginning of the match. That's not how the match was going to go, right? So we have a game plan, just like the teams have a game plan on how they're going to address the match. And I think with anything, there are three games in every match. There's the actual game itself, all 22 players. There's the dark arts, which we know happened within a match. And then there's the referee crew. And so I think what frustrates a lot of people a lot of times is that the coach and the players are able to adjust to the other team, but they don't adjust to the dark arts and they don't adjust to the referee crew.
Gotcha. So now, going based off, since we've talked about the laws and everything, how do you hold, I know there's procedures on giving cards to coaches, mm-hmm. Parents' conduct on the sideline, as a whole, how do you, as a parent, if a game's getting chippy, if I start seeing fouls being called more and more, I think as a parent, it could either go either way. No matter what you do, it can go either way. It either escalates or de-escalates the problem. So parents can understand from the official side of this, is it smarter to let the calls be called or blow the whistle? And it's one of the refs I talk to on a regular basis. He goes, just blow the whistle. He goes, it will de-escalate the circumstances much faster than letting him get chippy with each other. And finally, you'll get someone that will sideswipe someone in retaliation for something they did. And then it all blows up and it takes a few minutes for it to calm down. And as parents, how can we help you all with the league to be better?
I think
putting the burden on us.
There's one, enjoy the game, right? You're there ultimately to watch your player and your team and support your team and enjoy the game. I think the next thing you can do is maybe the laws of the game, there's 17 of them. If anything, read 11 through 17, right? Those deal with the actual play on the pitch. So read those and just try to understand them. But I would say from an official's perspective, the age-old adage is what you don't whistle in the first half, you'll write in the second half, right? So within the first couple minutes, most everybody knows where your tolerance is going to be and what you're going to allow on the field. But I would say that the really good officials, they can read the match. As the match gets heated or as things come together or as there are more critical match incidents, you should probably be on your whistle a little bit more to maintain some control. And then as the players accept that, you can let up on that a little bit and put flow back into the game, which is really what everybody wants to see. That's what makes it the beautiful game. It's the flow of the ball within 45 minutes per half. And so you can move your bar for careless and trifling fouls up and down as the level of play and the players dictate or how the match dictates. When it comes to coaches and parent interaction within the classic league, the coaches are responsible for parent behavior. in MLS and things like that, the officials have no control over the stands. The only thing that they can control, that they can take any sort of action or control over, are derogatory or, help me, I've lost my word, Joe, comment, homophobic comments and things like that, right? So they can, there's a protocol that can go in place there. In our league, the coaches are responsible for parent behavior. And so we don't throw parents out. The coach has them removed, or the coach gets a card. Now, with the coach's help, we can ask parents to go to the parking lot or to be removed from the touchline because they are creating a disturbance, which interrupts with the flow of the match. But ultimately, it's the coach's responsibility for parent behavior within our league.
Thank you.
They'll get the card one way or another.
Right.
Now, we have rules in place that once we, from the A&D side now, I put my A&D cap on, we have rules in place that if we can identify who the parents are, we can put touchline bans in place. We can put monetary fines in place for the parents and the team and the club for poor behavior.
I like that. Okay.
I think Ian.
So, in other words, I need to keep my mouth shut and not yell at the IRA. That's my frustration.
Ian, you asked, what can parents do? And it seems like it's happening in every sport where parent behavior just continues to get more attention, and not in a positive way, where parents are getting into it and parents are coming onto the field. And that's not a trend that is positive for any youth sport. And I would say, and as a team manager who did that job for a number of years, and I'd always, number one, make sure that the coach, that I had the backing of the coach, because they're the one who's ultimately going to control everything. As always felt, as a good manager, I had to be able to get the cooperation of the parents. The coaches could determine some of the things about maybe Johnny's going to sit as a result of something. I didn't have that power. Is try to provide people the perspective that sport, we put our children in sports, not so that they can go to college and become professional athletes. That does happen, but to a very, very small minority of players. It's so they can learn the lessons of teamwork, of working hard and coming together, sportsmanship, and how to rise after a loss, and how to manage even winning. And as parents, when we go out there and we invalidate every parental lesson that we ever wanted to bestow upon our children so that they become good adults because of our behavior, and we become embarrassments to our children, that's not a positive thing for that family, or certainly for the game of soccer or any other sport. So I would just say to try to maintain that perspective that we are still setting examples, and more is caught than taught, right? You can tell your kids all you want, but they're going to watch us, and we are models of behavior for them.
I like that. Thank you. I could sit here and talk laws all day long because this is one area that I truly love of the game because it's fascinating. But I'm going to have to shift directions here because there's other things I feel like we need to talk about. The big thing that hit social media last year with Classic League that made the nationwide pages for Facebook is the player pool. And as a parent, you guys have player pools, which I see now is trying to be more competitive with, or allows the chance for clubs to be more competitive with their teams because they have 15 different ABC leagues out there now. Is there a way that you guys are going to change any of this? Because I feel like you guys are more strict than any other league I've seen so far. I don't know about ECNL and all them, but the local leagues that we've played in, you show up with the jersey number, you answer to the right name, you're on the field. Because the player card doesn't have a picture on it. And how are you guys cultivating this player pool policy that you have? Because as a parent, I can see it playing one of two ways. My kid's coach is very strict. Like, he doesn't want to carry a lot of kids on his roster because he wants playing time for all of his players. Especially at the younger ages, my son is very fortunate and gets to play with the older age group also. And we know that he might get 0 minutes in a game or he might get 10 minutes in a game. And we're perfectly fine with that because our perspective is about the development of him as a player. But how are you guys going to control the player pool? And there are the rules in place for it that has to be within the club, and they can't play certain, if correct me if I'm wrong. So if you're a D2 player, you can't play down to D3 if you're playing U11. And if you are a D1 player, you can't go down in the older age groups. But if you're jumping age groups, you are more than welcome to play in any division in that. And with the player pool, do they have to be part of Classic League, or do they not have to be part of Classic League to start?
Let me touch on something. Somebody else can jump from there. Number one, I think the important thing to understand is why we did that. And I'll just tell you, from the previous rule was club player pass, and where we'd allow up to three club players per club pass players per game. And those would typically either come from a younger age group. It could be a Division I player playing up, or it could be somebody on a Division II play, D3 playing D2, D2 playing D1. Challenges, it caused a lot of heartache and a lot of consternation and a lot of challenges, because coaches are working full-time jobs, managers are working full-time jobs. There's deadlines on Thursday by noon to meet the Saturday deadline. That inevitably some human error would come in and those players wouldn't get added. I know that as we get to the spring, oftentimes in the older age groups, you go out there to officiate a match and these teams are showing up with 8-9 guys, who's these high school players with prom the night before or homecoming, things of that nature. I think so. Number one is just understand kind of the why, right? Number one, we want to solve the club player problem. Now, we do allow that system as well, but also we want to have a competitive match on the other field. It doesn't really benefit you to have your son show up to play in a competitive match and only have 9 players on the other side, right? So we wanted to open that up. Now, somebody else can take it from there. Rob, you want to, or Suma?
Yeah, sure. We still have our player pool policy is a little broader than what it used to be when it was originally instituted. But basically what we're saying is we're allowing a team to put up to 30 kids on a roster. And that makes it easier for that team to make sure that they have enough kids to play. It took the pressure off the managers and our office, our registrar, for the deadlines to make sure that those kids were on the roster. And that primarily came from the club pass player rule, which, by the way, is still in effect. Teams now have an option. They can pull club pass players, and they're still subject to all the rules of the club pass player within Classic League, or they can simply just roster them on that team, whether they play them or not. At least they have that person who is on there. And so I think it was just designed to make it easier for clubs to make sure that they had enough players to put 20 on the bench. Actually, yeah, 18. Sorry. 18 to 22, depending on the age group.
I know as they get older, there's a lot of teams that get hit with injuries very quickly, and yeah. You might have 9 players of your starting 11 that are all out with injuries on a consistent basis in the spring after high school season starts. I know there is some of those issues why the number is to 30, but I think a lot of parents just see it as a way a club's trying to cheat by putting bigger, stronger players.
So they can only play up. They can't play down. And right. I think you were right when you said that in the original part of your question. Can't play down. They may be on a D2 or a D1 team because of their level of play. And so they can only play up from there, or they can play up an age group. They can't go backwards.
Right. And they aren't coming from ECNL teams like they pull and all these other.
They have to be registered and rostered on a USYS North Texas team to be able to play in our league, which is why we look at video ID cards that have a picture, which is why we every year tell teams and managers, please update your picture. We can't take a U18 vid card and have his 5th birthday picture still be on there, right? That doesn't work. And there's a lot of teams that you look at that and you go, there's absolutely no way that's you. We caught one the other night and wouldn't allow the kid to play. So he knew his birthday. He knew his jersey number. There's no way that the image on the video card matched the kid who was standing in front of us, and we wouldn't let him play.
That's as much as it stinks for the player not being able to play, but it's great to hear that you're trying to keep the integrity of the game going. That's the one of my pet peeves as a parent. You have all these kids that want to play and they can't, but in that case, there's some shenanigans going on is the best way of describing it. Now, I wrote this all down and I have to go back to my notes. Sorry. And my phone. This is where I'm not trying to be mean to other leagues in the area or nationwide leagues. Texas is one of the hot spots for soccer. And I will be honest, I am, the more I've spent time watching teams play, my son and I watch, my family, not just my son, my whole family watches a lot of soccer. And as I am watching what's happening to our rec associations, they're dying because these academies are taking, these clubs are taking the rec players and shoving them in I'm going to be blunt on this because I don't feel like our rec associations are getting enough credit for what they're doing. We're getting more kids playing, leaving rec to go play club because they're told it's more competitive. And I've sat through my first rec, U6 rec game a couple weekends ago, way different than my daughter's competitive club team that she plays on. Same age group, completely how the refs are. I was like, that's a handball. That is a foul. And they're just falling all over, running into each other. And in the club world, it's very competitive. But at the same time, how are you guys making sure your league is not being watered down? Because there are so many clubs that have so many teams. And as a parent looking in, you guys have a lot of independent clubs. And I love watching these independent clubs stomp the big clubs in the community because it is fun because they have all the resources. And you're seeing these big clubs watering down their top teams because they have 5-6 teams deep in that age group. And if they would have top 3 teams playing for their club and the rest playing A for another club where they can get the correct attention, or B playing in rec where they might need to be because that's the level of play they're at, no matter how much money their parents pay for private lessons and all this stuff, how do you guys make sure that you aren't getting watered down? Because I see other leagues that are nationwide leagues that are very watered down. You have teams that leave here from Dallas, go play in Denver, come back here and crush the team in Denver, and then come back here and get crushed by a D1 team from Classic League in a tournament. And no one pays attention to this. And they're there to win that tournament. They aren't there to get third place and be kicked out because the top 2 teams are from D1 Classic. So how do you make sure your leagues are being competitive locally, so the parents understand the value that you guys provide?
I'll take this for a second. First of all, let's go back to promotion, relegation, and qualification to get in the league. So I think that alone right there does create a need to be competitive in order to not only get in the league, but stay in the league. The reality is there are more playing opportunities out there, more leagues than there were certainly than when my son started playing 10 years ago. And that is creating probably a level of play across the board that's probably not as concentrated as it once was. I think we'd all be lying if we said we thought that the quality of play at every division was as high as what it once was, given the landscape. I will say that my son, when his last 2 years, he went to a club and he was both dual rostered on both the ECNL as well as on the Classic League. Now, the ECNL team, and it was typically a quality team, but anything lower than that, his Classic League team would certainly probably beat them 9 times out of 10. I don't know if that completely answers your question, but promotion, relegation, and qualification in the league is a big part of what we're talking about. I think that does preserve the competitive nature of the league. I'll also tell you that I've seen North Texas teams just go and do extremely well. For instance, we would go to the Vegas Cup every year, and it turns out, and that was, we would end up playing the state champions from Arizona, California. California had some quality teams, but also from Utah. And 2 years in a row, 3 out of the 4 teams that made the finals were teams from Dallas, right? And the teams that won were always from Dallas. And we made the finals 2 years in a row, lost to the same Dallas-based team. I know how well we acquitted ourselves nationwide in a pretty good competitive tournament.
I find it frustrating as a parent because you have all these, I think Gio Valquez said it well when I interviewed him. He goes, if you're not winning everything locally, there's no point of leaving your local area. And I feel the structure you guys have talked about today has been, you have the structure where you can be dominant in your local market and have the chance to grow beyond, to hit the national scene and not be in one of these leagues where there's only a handful of them, but where you can't be a small independent club and be competitive. And I feel like Classic League allows for true competition in the marketplace, and it's not watered down. It's not, I call it Americanized sports without promotion relegation. And I think that's key that you guys still have that. Do you feel that there will be a time when you will be able to say to these other alphabet leagues that are out there and say, hey, look, come try us out. Let's have our own little tournament and see who wins, or have something along those grounds where you can say, let's see who's the best. And because you have the top clubs doesn't mean you're the best teams. I can name some great coaches in the area that had small independent clubs that ended up merging or being bought into a larger club that are way better teams. But the only reason they actually join, and anyone you talk to knows the truth, it's so they have access to those national level leagues, because they can't get there with on their own without a lot of time passing and possibly losing players. So how will you guys, I guess it might be a strategic question and for you all, but how are you guys going to find a way to make sure that you guys are always relevant in the community? Because as a parent having a young player, I don't care about the badge on the shoulder or the badge on the kit. It's truly, is the coach developing? Is the club truly looking out for the best interest of the players? And how are you guys going to help navigate that in the near future? Because the market is very crowded.
I'd say that things have changed rapidly, probably in the last 3 to 4 years. What I love about this league is that we're always willing to innovate. We'll make a change. We find out it's not beneficial, we'll change back. But we're always looking to do what we feel like is going to be in the best interest of the player experience and the team experience. And so I've seen, we went to U12 Division I, getting to play on the 11v11 fields in the spring, as just a bit to prepare them for the U13 year and going up to larger fields. I think we still need to basically vet out that experiment. That those are the kind of things that the league is willing to innovate, willing to change, go to a player pool, and so you have the longevity that you talk about, the tradition going back to 1978, and yet you have the willingness to innovate and try things to improve the league. Doesn't mean we always get everything exactly right, but I think there's enough ingredients there that we'll find the right balance of what that is. I do love the fact that we have seen the rise of the independent clubs, because we're now providing an opportunity, and the landscape has provided an opportunity as more of those larger clubs are playing in some of those other national leagues that you're referring to. That does give opportunities to these independent teams. Everybody loves a good Rocky story. I do like that idea. We might have to go talk about whether it be some type of tournament, some kind of an event where maybe you match up your champions. That might be fun.
Yeah, I think that's a good question for us to continue to think on, because I don't believe that we market our league the way other leagues are marketed. I think we've set back and we've been the classic. We've been here for a long time and we're full. All of our divisions are full. All of our slots are full. And that comes from the challenge tournament and the qualifying tournament. We have teams that want to get into the classic league on the USYS side. And I think if you look at the landscape overall in soccer, you have the MLS next, right? So those are the top players in those areas or on those teams. And then you go USYS or you go US club soccer. And from there, you get the classic on USYS, you get the classic league, you get Plano, Arlington, and the other leagues in USYS. You go US club, you get, I got to think about all my letters here, ECNL, ECRL, the third division, ECRL North Texas. And they just expanded that this year. So now that went from those age groups went from 10, 12 teams to 24, 27, 28 teams, because they're just looking at it as a way to gobble up teams to try to make their numbers, I think, look bigger, right? I don't think there's any true movement within those three divisions that the ECRL North Texas team, if they win, they can go to ECRL. And if they win, they can go to ECNL. That's not how that's set up. You're ranked. These are the best players. These are the next best players. This is the rest of everybody else that we were able to bring in. But through us, we allow teams who may have played in Arlington, who may have played in Plano, or who play in Tyler, or who play in Abilene. You want to play a little bit better soccer? You want to have that experience? Come to the Classic League. Challenge into our league. You're going to be in D3, and within the end of the year, if you're that good, you could be in D1. And then you have the ability to win the top two spots in D1, and you play in the Dallas Cup. I'm pretty positive the other league, US Club, can't say that. you want to be in the top four in your division, you can play in the Frontier League. I'm pretty positive U.S. club soccer can't say that. You have the ability to go to State Cup this year, which would send you on to regionals, which would send you on to nationals. That's the pathway through USYS. And I think maybe North Texas could do a little bit better job promoting that. I know the Classic League, we can do a little bit better job marketing that. But that's truly the way that leads to the success on USYS, where U.S. club soccer seems to be, oh, we're going to have another tournament because this group of players, they can't go anywhere. So we'll have a tournament in Denver to let them play, to see who's going to win of division.
You might want to bring up MLS Next now, too. We formed a partnership with them. They're actually playing their MLS Next games on our fields when we're not using them. And they're practicing on our fields. And it's also another pathway for our kids to go from Classic League to the MLS Next. And in fact, they've been taking a player here, taking a player there. And most coaches, if they're really wanting the best for their player and that kid is that good, then he needs to be on the MLS Next team and not just stay in Classic League.
I did not know that. That's really impressive that you were able to make that tie with the MLS Next program, because to me that is, if you're one of the founding teams part of that, I mean, there's a lot of clubs involved that are not directly connected to an MLS team in the league, but they do compete and they do have a different recognition level on a national level than all the other Alphabet Leagues.
We have a board member this year who had his son go out there and he made an MLS Next team. It's an option and a very good one.
I love hearing that.
And a very good one.
Now, my son's team also had players that left the team that we're on now, and they both play for MLS Next.
That's awesome to hear.
I know your son, you told me he was playing up, and that was a U13 match, right? So he's still got a lot of years left. And I think, how's to think about, these are student athletes. Most of these kids at this age are playing. My son played every sport up until high school. He played football, basketball, ran track, ran cross country for his school. It would have been very difficult had he been in a program that required all that weekend travel and the entire weekends. And sometimes maybe even an entire, I can remember several times just having to drive to Tulsa for one match and it taking the entire day, leaving at 7 in the morning, not getting home till 9 o'clock at night. I don't know what that does. A steady diet of that over a number of years. We only had it the last 2 years, but I can tell you, I don't believe that he would have lasted through his U18 year if that was a regular occurrence his entire playing career. I just think kids want to be with friends. They want to do other things. They want to go to birthday parties. And if they can come out and be and play a match on a great local field with great competition, with great referees, and still get to go be a kid, and do all the other things that enjoy family time and friend time and the other things they do at school, I think that's a tremendous advantage for our league. And I think people will realize that over time.
I think families need to understand everything that goes on. My son's 10. He plays on a U11 and he gets to go guest play for a 2012 team. He's a 2014. He gets to go play 2 years up because that's the team that his coach has. And as a parent watching this, and we talk about it heavily in our home, is we're worried about the burnout factor of these young kids. Will he burn out by the time he's 13 because we pushed him so hard? And I don't feel like we push him because he dictates what he wants to do. He came home from school the other day. They were running laps in PE, and the PE teachers are doing a run club. Here's a permission form. He brings it home to us. He goes, can I join this? I'm like, sure. It's like, it's us as parents having to realize there's so much more outside of soccer than what they're doing in their childhood. I talked to a parent the other day. We talked about just enjoying the games. And I can't enjoy a game when my son's not playing on the field. So I'm analyzing what's going on the field when he's not on it. When he's on it, I tend to enjoy it more because I'm watching him play and doing his thing. And I think that's what's missing in our society is that it's the win at all cost, and not every kid is cut from that cost, so to speak. That it takes a very particular kid. I always like the quote that 0.5% of all kids make it to a professional level. And if you want to talk sports across all sports, that's a very small number. But my question to add on to that is, what point of that 0.5% of that player pool practiced every single day on their own, did not have their parents driving them to private training sessions. And I think that is what you're talking about, Joe, is will they get burned out in those last 2 years with all that travel? And not every kid's cut out for that.
What's their relationship with the game post-playing career? Do they still love the game, or do they regret the time that they spent because they were maybe asked to give up more things? And believe me, the world is going to – I think you're completely right. These elite athletes are going to drive themselves, and they're going to strive to be in those leagues and situations that are more demanding. But the vast majority you identified in this 99.5% is the rest of them.
So I want to mention a young man that came in, and he won our top scholarship last year, a very impressive young man. He came to us because U19s were usually backfilling because so many U18 teams graduate, so whoever has a U19 team will take. And he approached us and he said, I've got 18 to 22 boys that played for the bigger clubs and got burnt out and stopped playing their junior year. And he said, if I can get them together and we make a team, would you allow us to come play U19? And we did. And they had a great experience. One of them, by coming back, he played in the Classic League, and then when his club went to the other league, he obviously wasn't eligible for the scholarship anymore because you have to be in the Classic League or associated with it to get it. So by coming back his senior year, he was able to do that as well. But this year, they've gone on. I don't know where he goes to school, I do know where he went to school, but the guy underneath him is doing the same thing. We have another U19 team, which is a bunch of kids that love the sport, got burned out on it because of what was going on over there, and wanted to come in and just play. And they play, like I said, we play a jumbo season in U19. They just played. They had fun. Several of them made the Senior Bowl, so they had that experience as well. In fact, one of the Senior Bowl players didn't go to college after that. That was part of this group. Do you know the Comstocks, Joe?
Yes.
Okay. Her son is playing in England now.
Right, Sean.
Yeah. So this was an opportunity that they had, and they didn't want to give up the sport. They were just burned out on the way they were having to do things. And they came, he put the whole thing together. He came in and introduced me to the young man from this year, and they're playing in our league again with the same kind of group. Kids that quit because they realized they weren't going to play in college, but they still wanted to play soccer and have fun.
I love hearing that. I'm not taking up too much more of your time. I'm going to ask my favorite question at the end of all my interviews. So each one of you can take a turn. I guess it's however you want to answer it. So as an official, as someone that's part of soccer and someone that's part of Classic League, if you played or if you coach, who has been the greatest influence you on each one of those roles that you've had throughout your life with the game? And how have they affected you today?
Who wants to go first?
It's a very strange question.
It's interesting because everyone has a different person that influenced them differently. I talked to a food nutritionist one time, and she said the person that influenced herself was herself in college because she finally learned what it meant to prep for those marathons, to prep for all that stuff. And it was truly herself motivating her because she didn't have anyone else. I've had people talk about their parents or their kids, or I had a coach one time tell me another coach that they actually being mentored by at the time. So it really comes down to who motivates you to be what you're doing in this beautiful game that we all love.
So I'll start. I'll be honest with you. It's my kids, and especially my older two kids, because I manage both their teams almost all the way through. I actually gave both teams up at U6, and we put a male manager in there. But it wasn't just my own kids. I took on all the kids on that team. They were all my children. And to this day, and they're older now, and they're in their 30s, or some of them are in their 40s, they'll call me and I'll go out and have a drink with all of them, or I'll go have a meal with all of them. And those relationships to this day for my boys, their club teams. And again, I say that because their club teams, their core group made it almost all the way through. They added a player here or there, but the majority of the players were there from U11 all the way through. They're best friends still. They still communicate. They still do a lot of things together. They watch World Cup together. They all have different Premier League teams. They get on text chains. And I spent a lot of time helping a lot of them communicate with colleges when it was time for them to look at colleges. So just watching them, watching their successes. We went the other night to Frost Bank opened a new division up here on Beltline, and the three of us were, happens just to be the three of us again, were over there to accept a check towards our scholarships. And that young man is one of the young men I'm talking about. He picked up the phone and called me and said, we want to do this. And I'm proud of him. He's head of that bank now. And he was part of this group. It's a kid. I'm here for the kids. I'm not here to be a millionaire because it's not going to happen, but it's for the kids. And my kids were a huge part of that. But then our family got extended.
Yeah, I guess I'll go next and let Rob play bat cleanup. For me, growing up as just a young kid at Catholic parochial school, we formed a kind of a school team. We called ourselves, we were the Saint Monica Saints. And it turns out one parent realized we had a kid named Matthew. We had a kid named Mark, a kid named Luke, and a kid named John. And my name is Joseph. And we had one kid who had a sister named Mary, right? And we had a kid named Jesus, right? We had the entire gospel writers and the Holy Family all covered. And that coach was Mr. Mathis. And we still talk. I still play soccer with these guys to this day. And we talk about the old times. If it weren't for my son's involvement in the game and the fact that I saw him make a commitment beyond any commitment that I ever made, we looked at it because a recreational sport, it was something to do with our friends. This is a different landscape now. You fast forward to the world where there'd even be something like a soccer podcast that you're doing. But I saw him make that level of dedication. Well, if it wasn't for him, I would have never become a team manager. And through becoming a team manager and get involved in all the various things that the soccer world's going to pull you into, you're getting ball boys for MLS games. You're taking teams. We took a team to Guadalajara for the Copa Chivas and all the people you meet through that process, work in Dallas Cup. But it was always his dedication, his work ethic, because he could have quit at any point. I had his high school coach, a guy who's been around for a long time, Charlie DeLong, look at me on the sideline one night. I was down there using our club's video camera to record the game. And he said, I want to tell you something, Mr. Cole. He said, your son is the toughest player I've ever had. Now, he had Kenny Cooper. He's had a number of people that have gone on to play really extremely high levels. And I said, are you telling me that like he's stupid? He's going into reckless challenges. And he goes, no, your son is the toughest player I've ever had. I figured, well, and that kind of dedication where a coach like that who's got as many years of experience, that inspired me. That made me feel great about son. He doesn't play college soccer. He decided he could have. He decided he wanted to get a big college experience. So he's a Clemson Tiger now. That team did win the national championship game, but he was just a spectator for that. So I'd say my son is.
I love it.
Mr. Rodeo.
I mentioned earlier, I did not grow up playing soccer. I rodeoed. I was a regional and national rodeo judge, and that was all in a previous life. So my son, when he came along, he's played ever since he was 3 years old. He played rec. We moved up through the select side. We moved over into Classic League. We've played Classic League every year that he was able to play. And I can remember, I guess he was probably 6 or 7, and I was that dad on the touchline. I was that dad like, I can't believe you didn't call that foul. Are you blind? What's your deal? And after the match, the referee came over and he said, hey, he said, you think you can do a better job? And I said, dude, I know I can do a better job. He gave me a $100 bill and said, go take your course. Go take your course and see if you can do a better job. So I did. I studied the laws. I took my test. I passed my test. North Texas sent me my badge. And my very first match out was a U16. I was in the center. I got smoked. Didn't know what I was doing. Completely out of my depth. And it took a long time to understand that there's more to soccer than just being a parent on the touchline and things like that, right? There's more than to being a player and just dropping them off at practice and watching them run drills. There's a point to everything. But so I saw that referee probably 3 years later. We were both working a tournament together, and I stopped him and I gave him his $100 bill back and told him that I apologized for everything that I had called him to his face and afterwards. But I truly enjoy soccer. And so I was refereeing some local associations here, and we got into the Classic League. Tegan was U11. We went through the qualifying tournament. We got in. I had gone from one association over to watch his match, and I ran into the assigner at Classic League, and she's like, "Hey, I don't know you. Why are you dressed like that?" And I said, "I was just working another league. My son plays here." She's like, "You need to come out and be an official here." So she recruited me. I worked over to the Classic League side, and I think from there on, it's all the people that I get to work with is the reason that I stay. So I work with Joe. Joe and I work on the pitch together. We work off the pitch together. I get to work with Suma in the association and to help run and make this league a little bit better, a little bit stronger for everybody. And I think that's probably what keeps me driven. So my son, this is his last year, and I'll still referee out there, and I'll still work for the Classic League, even though his soccer playing days are down to just months.
Hey, everyone. I hope you all enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. This week with Suma, Joe, and Rob was a great experience for me as a parent. Learning about Classic League, the history of it, what they're doing, how it's set up. I think if you haven't taken time, go look them up. If your kids aren't playing in Classic League, go look them up. See what they're doing. As a person that's a firm believer in promotion and relegation in competitive soccer, you have to have leagues that allow that. And I like how they do it. They break it over 6 months. You get promoted after 6 months. You get relegated after that. And if you're not performing, you know where you end up. And at the end of the day, I think that's critical. I think you should have to work hard to be successful. I think it shouldn't just be handed to your club because you put X amount of teams in a league, or you just buy your way into it. You have to earn your way into the league, and then you have to maintain your status. And that being said, that is amazing. And there's nothing like that out there. The MLS Next, any of them. There's no promotion, there's no relegation, and I think that's critical for youth development because it pushes your players to go play against the best in their age group. And at the end of the day, if you want to go learn more about Classic League, go check out their website, go check out their social media. They talked about the Senior Bowl, which I interviewed late last year, and they have their own showcase. They have all these things set up for the players to be successful. And it's up to us as parents to evaluate this league and see what it's worth. And at the end of the day, you may not agree with it. You may not like it. But what are the other leagues trying to do to give a chance for the best players to be in it? That is not a buy-in system. Hey, everyone. If you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.